This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This weekend may bring us a step closer to ending the war in the former Yugoslavia, or it may set the stage for a widening war. The leaders of the three warring factions in Bosnia will resume peace talks this weekend. President Clinton is expected to decide sometime tomorrow whether he will call for American military intervention. Earlier this week, we heard from two people who passionately believe it is our moral responsibility to use military force to stop the genocide in Bosnia. My guest, Misha Glenny, is passionate in his opposition to military intervention. Glenny is covering the war for the BBC, and he's the author of the book The Fall of Yugoslavia, which just received the Overseas Press Club Award for the best book on foreign affairs. Misha Glenny is certain that outside military intervention would only lead to a wider, bloodier war. He says comparisons to the Holocaust don't hold.
The fact of the matter is that unlike many comparisons which are made, this is not the situation in the Balkans is not like Germany in the 1930s. This is not like Nazi imperialism. It's an extremely inaccurate and misleading historical parallel. What this is a number of nations attempting to form nation states by force in the wake of the collapse of the former Yugoslavia. Now, if obviously the Serbs are chiefly responsible for most of the violence, there's no question about that, but they are not the only ones responsible. President Tudjman of Croatia must bear considerable responsibility, and indeed there are radicals in the leadership of the Muslims who have always encouraged the idea of war in the hope that they will receive weapons, i.e. they have been prepared to sacrifice their own civilian populations because they thought that this would lead to a supply of arms to them. Now, in that sense, nobody bears full responsibility, and the Croats bear a lot of responsibility for this war in particular. So if you aim your airstrikes at one side, against one side, that is against the Serbs, what you're going to do is you're going to get a sense of real grievance among the Serbs, and they are likely to provoke further conflict elsewhere. But in addition, the Croats, the Muslims, and the Albanians in Kosovo are all going to see this as a sign of potential weakness amongst the Serbs, and they will make their move and try and form their nation states at the expense of the Serbs, and so the whole thing will widen and will become much, much worse.
So the picture you're painting sounds like there's a lot of leaders who, for opportunistic reasons, almost want military intervention, and the people will suffer.
Of course they do. The point is that, you know, if you were to arm the Muslims sufficiently, for example, what they would do is they would go through eastern Bosnia in the Serb-held areas and do unto the Serb civilians what the Serbs have already done to them. That means you would be getting a sort of leveling of the atrocities, basically. And that's all very well. It may, you know, I mean, the Serbs may deserve it for being such pigs in eastern Bosnia, but it's hardly a sort of moral response to a moral outrage, is to say, well, the only response to that is to allow them to do the same thing. You know, I don't think that moral argument works in the slightest. Also, you know, if you're going to lift the arms embargo, for example, how do you get them to the Muslims? You'd have to get them through the Croatian lines. Now, the Croats have stated quite openly and publicly that they will not allow a single bullet to get through to the Muslims, because, as we know, the Muslims and Croats are now fighting in large parts of central Bosnia. So the only way you can get them through is to send them in by aircraft. Now, if you were to send in arms by aircraft to the Muslims, then the Serbs and the Croats will fire at you, and that means that we would be at war with Serbia and Croatia, and I think that's a very dangerous position to get ourselves into.
So you strongly oppose lifting the arms embargo?
I strongly oppose anything other than a commitment, first of all, to the Vance-Owen plan, which has been lacking, particularly amongst the Clinton administration, although if you actually look at what the Clinton administration is now advocating, it is nothing other than the Vance-Owen plan. The point about the Vance-Owen plan, which is really important to make, let's scotch one or two myths. Clinton came in at the beginning of his administration. He says, we're not going to go with the Vance-Owen plan because it legitimizes ethnic cleansing and it appeases Serbian aggression. This is sheer hogwash. It actually punishes the Serbs and makes them hand back 60% of the territory that they have conquered militarily in the past year, including many of the towns that they have cleansed. And so the reason why the Croats and the Muslims have signed the Vance Plan is because it's in their interest to do so. It is not in the interest of the Serbs, and that's why they haven't signed it. But the Clinton administration should have given the Vance Owen Plan their full backing. Secondly, the UN troops on the ground need much more commitment. They need to have a stronger mandate. They need to fire back if they're fired upon. And above all else, we need to get a large number of United Nations troops inside the threatened cities like Srebrenica, Gorazd, Djepa, and so on and so forth. They must disarm the militias in those towns that they are protecting, and then they must create de facto safe havens. In that way, the Serbs or whoever is attacking a particular safe haven cannot claim that the United Nations is protecting a militia. They will be protecting civilians and civilians alone. And so that is the only intervention that we should have as a way of creating a gradual air of demilitarization. If you do anything else, all you're going to do is to lead to a massive escalation of the war. And it's all very well for the Americans to go in and say, right, we'll hit a few Serb targets and then we'll pull back to New York and Washington. What I want to know is going to happen to the millions of Albanians, Macedonians, Serbs, Hungarians, and or whoever who are going to get caught up in a bloodbath.
I know you said that it's really not fair to compare what's happening in the former Yugoslavia now to what happened in Germany during the Second World War, but it does seem, at least you know, from the perspective of the United States sitting here, it does seem that there is genocide being attempted in Bosnia, and genocide is a pretty convincing argument for military intervention.
Yes, but what we have to realize is that why is that genocide happening? It is not happening as part of a plan which was first of all was conceived over a decade ago, as Adolf Hitler did in the early 1920s in preparation for the final solution. That genocide is what happens every single time territorial disputes in the Balkans move from peaceful are articulated no longer through peaceful means but through armed conflict. Then the minority populations in any territory becomes a strategic threat to those people fighting. And this always happens in the Balkans. I can read you reports from the Carnegie Commission on the First and Second Balkan Wars published in 1914, which could have come out of yesterday's New York Times, because they're identical. Whenever the Balkans goes up, these sorts of atrocities happen. Secondly, the West bears substantial responsibility for this war in Bosnia-Herzegovina. It bears it primarily because Germany insisted on the premature recognition of Croatia. Once you recognize Croatia prematurely, then Bosnia-Herzegovina, which is not in a position politically to constitute itself as an independent state, Bosnia-Herzegovina stands at the mercy of imperial wishes not only in Belgrade but also in Zagreb, i.e. the Serbs and the Croats both. Secondly, when the European community told the Bosnians that they could have an independent state if they held a referendum and there was a simple 51% majority, which then went ahead, they violated the central constitutional principle in Bosnia-Herzegovina, which guarantees peace. That is the principle of three constituent nations. You cannot make constitutional changes in Bosnia, either without having all of the parties agreeing to it, or without the outbreak of war. And that was inevitable. It was written. People were warning against it. Cy Vance warned against it. Perez de Cuellar warned against it. Alija Izetbegovic, the Bosnian president, went to Bonn in December 1991 and begged with Chancellor Kohl and Hans-Dietrich Genscher not to recognize Croatia because it was a death sentence for Bosnia-Herzegovina. So we aren't in a position to talk about principled solutions in this conflict or just solutions, because we have acted unprincipledly and screwed things up ourselves in the first place. And so we cannot blame the Serbs exclusively. We have to try and stop war going on there and not to increase it by an emotive response to the atrocities.
I understand that you're saying we bear some of the responsibility for what's happening there, but when the actions that you're talking about started, there wasn't genocide, and now there is attempted genocide, and the United States is one of the signatories to a pact that says that we will that we will try to prevent genocide. I mean, isn't it a responsibility?
I understand what you're saying. I'm afraid I have to contradict you, though. Perhaps in the United States, people weren't so interested in the Yugoslav conflict as I remember from June 1991 onwards, although I do make the very honorable exception of NPR, which I think has covered this war very well. But let me tell you, from the minute that this war started in Croatia in June 1991, the Croats and Serbs were cleansing each other left, right, and center, not only in the war zones, but in civilian zones close to the war zones, like Zagreb, Zadar, Karlovac, and so on. This is nothing new. Now, I understand that the most appalling things are going on in Bosnia-Herzegovina. I have witnessed them with my own eye. I have talked to the victims. I have seen the bodies, and it is the most bestial, ghastly thing that I have ever witnessed in my whole life, nor am I ever likely to. However, if we respond incorrectly, remember that the Western community, the international community, both Europe and the United States, has screwed up monumentally from the very outbreak of this war. If we do it again, if we make a mistake this time, we're not talking about what remains, despite all the horror, a localized war in the Balkans, that is one restricted to the peripheral areas of Croatia and the whole of Bosnia-Herzegovina. We're talking about a massive conflagration across the whole of southeastern Europe, implicating Greece and Turkey, not to mention the possibility of it spreading up north through Hungary, and not to mention what the impact of this is going to be on Russia. And so, however ghastly it is in Bosnia-Herzegovina, our priority is to stop the balloon going up in southeastern Europe, because we will be heading then towards a massive destabilization of the European continent. And so in that sense, however ghastly what's happening to the Muslims is, what we must concentrate on doing is, first of all, stopping a Balkan war, secondly, protecting the civilians and not supporting the Muslim militia in any way. We have to protect the civilians, and that's why safe havens is a good idea, because it stops the genocide.
You're making a distinction between supporting Muslim militias and supporting Muslim citizens with the arms embargo.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, don't let the Muslims protect themselves by giving them weapons, because they will use that to commit new atrocities, this time on the Serbs. Although, again, one thing that hasn't been pointed out in the press here very readily is that the fighting in central Bosnia going on at the moment is not largely the Croats' responsibility. It is largely the Muslims' responsibility. And although there have been some dramatic pictures of the Croats cleansing the Muslims, there have been equally dramatic events of Muslims cleansing Croats and hounding families out of their homes by the hundred, which have not been reported at all. The Muslims, understandably, because they're so traumatized, they are no angels. So do not give it to those people who will just commit further atrocities. Concentrate on the real problem, which is the civilian population, i.e. the victims.
My guest is journalist Misha Glenny. He's been covering the war in the former Yugoslavia for the BBC. He's also the author of the book The Fall of Yugoslavia, The Third Balkan War, which just received the Overseas Press Award for the best book on foreign affairs. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to an interview recorded earlier today with journalist Misha Glenny. You're very confident that if Europe and the United States intervene militarily, that the war will spread. Where do you think it would go, and how do you think, what do you think the pattern would be?
Well, first of all, I think that in particular that Croatia would take advantage of disarray amongst the Serbs, and that they would attempt to reestablish militarily their sovereignty over the Serb-occupied areas of Croatia. If that happens, you have a revival of what's called the large-scale Serbo-Croat War, which we haven't yet seen this time round. We've only seen the small-scale Serbo-Croat War. What will happen is that the Yugoslav army will move against Croatia. In all probability, it will bomb Zagreb, and the Croats, who, despite the arms embargo, have newly acquired missiles, will do the same to Belgrade, and you have a full-scale war not only in Croatia but also in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Not to mention the fact that, you know, I mean, the Serbs would respond, and indeed possibly the Croats would respond to any outside military force, the United Nations or so on and so forth. They'd see this as the occupier and the enemy. What we have to do now, rather than talking about intervention, is make sure this damn meeting in Athens works over the weekend, and make sure Milosevic twists the arms or breaks the arms of Karadzic and the Bosnian Serbs in their parliament, and get them to accept the Vance-Owen plan. If we can do that, we have a peaceful way, at least a breathing space, out of this Balkan crisis. Any other road leads to a massive conflagration.
Can't you make the argument that the threat of military force would be a good incentive for the leaders who are meeting in Greece this weekend to reach some kind of agreement?
Well, it would be if you say, you know, not only are we going to take out Serb artillery, but we're going to take out Croat artillery as well. But because, you know, the point is the Croats haven't committed anything like the amount of atrocities that the Serbs have. But militarily and politically, they've done exactly the same thing. They have, which is what Izetbegovic has accused them of. And so, you know, it has to be any sort of threat of military force has to be one which is backed by a commitment to neutrality in what is essentially a civil war in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And that's the only type that is going to work. But if, you know, if the West were to say, look, we're really fed up with all of you, you all lie, you all cheat, you know, and this is something, for example, that the State Department doesn't realize. It believes that the Muslims, for some particular reason, have escaped all the traditions of Balkan politics, that they are honest, that they are wide-eyed, that they are peace-loving, and so on and so forth. Of course they're not. They're schooled in the same type of politics as Milosevic and Tudjman are. And yet that's something that the State Department refuses to recognize. But if we were to go to Athens and say, look, you're all a bunch of duplicitous fools who are driving not only yourselves but all your nations and the entire region into an unholy mess, and we've had enough of it, and we're going to put 200,000 ground troops into Bosnia-Herzegovina, we're going to demilitarize the whole area, and we're going to stop you fighting, that would have more credibility with those leaders than standing up and saying, right, if the Serbs don't sign this, we're going to bomb them. That simply does not have, that just excites everybody on the ground, and what we should be doing is calming them down.
You seem to think that the Vance-Owen peace plan is a workable plan if people signed on to it. I've heard a lot of people say that the only thing you can say in favor of the peace plan is that it exists and there's no competition, but it's not a very workable plan.
Well, you know, they have to say, in what way is it not workable? Of course it's not ideal, but then, you know, we created this situation by recognizing Croatia in the first place. So it's not ideal, it's a sticking plaster. Of course it's a sticking plaster, but what does it do? First of all, it guarantees a sense of Bosnian sovereignty. There will be a national country called Bosnia-Herzegovina. Secondly, it does not appease aggression, because the Serbs' aim would be to break off from Bosnia-Herzegovina and restore constitutional links with Serbia. Now, the Vance-Owen plan states quite categorically that the Serb-dominated areas may not form relations with other countries, i.e. Serbia, independently of the government of Bosnia-Herzegovina. So it doesn't appease aggression in that sense. If the plan is properly enforced, then all the results of cleansing will be reversed, because everybody will have the right to go back to their home, and that right will be guaranteed by the good offices of the United Nations. Now, politically, obviously, these 10 decentralized provinces are problematic in certain response, and it's not going to be easy, and it is not the ultimate solution to the problems posed by Bosnia-Herzegovina and the Balkans. But we do not have any other options. We do not, but this is an option which genuinely has a possibility of functioning. We also have to remember that these are very, very complex disputes, historically based, running back 180 years, not centuries as most people like to think, and that any solution to this problem is going to take years to implement now. It's going to take a very, very long time. And those who are expecting things to stop overnight, whether it's by bombing, whether it's by the Vance Owen plan, or whether it's by letting them get on and liquidate one another, those of us who expect that are unfortunately extremely misguided as to what is going on in Eastern Europe and the Balkans. The end of the Cold War is a historical explosion which has unleashed all sorts of profound problems based on the difficulties of territory and minorities, and it's going to take us decades to get this sorted out. But the more that we the more we provoke the situation over there, the more we risk screwing up and starting a war which could lead to a European war in the end.
The next few days are going to be critical in deciding what happens next. Can you just review for us what is about to happen? Clinton is going to be meeting with his advisors tomorrow, and we're told that sometime tomorrow he'll probably have a decision on what he thinks the United States policy should be. Now, what's going to be happening in Greece?
Well, I obviously this is going to be a very delicate weekend diplomatically. Clearly, David Owen and Tsaros Vance were hoping that Clinton would postpone any decision until after the weekend. Whether Clinton is going to decide but not reveal it until after the weekend is not entirely clear at the moment. But obviously, if they're in a delicate set of negotiations and the administration announces that it will be lifting the arms embargo, then the temptation for the Muslims to walk out of the agreement of the talks would simply be overwhelming. They'll say, right, well, that's it, we can go because we're getting weapons on Monday, and so we can fight our way out of this. So I think there will be an attempt by the co-chairman to request a postponement of any announcement by Clinton. What will be happening in Athens itself is we've got to get a deal very, very quickly because a lot of people are impatient, both from the international community and from amongst the warring factions and from Croatia and Serbia. And so if some sort of commitment to a peaceful deal isn't sorted out within the first day or within the first day and a half of these talks, then I think that things are likely to collapse and the future looks very, very black.
Misha Glenny spoke to us from New York. He returns to the Balkans Monday. Glenny is covering the war for the BBC. He's also the author of the book The Fall of Yugoslavia, The Third Balkan War. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.